A Botanist at Bay by Geoffrey Dobbs. This tape is a selection from a talk and verse reading I gave a few years ago to students at University College Bangor, mainly students of botany, forestry, and agriculture. This was done at a time when the takeover of the universities by the state educational system seemed to have become about complete. This ancient and dreary threat of control by a government bureaucracy, as well as by commercial and money interests, has been a perennial danger to the universities all through the centuries, as it has been to all teachers and scholars and students. The representation of its final achievement of its aims as a bright new idea in keeping with modern times and all that sort of nonsense is simply an example of the type of psychological warfare being waged upon us by those who believe they have the right to control our minds by the misuse of language. Anyway, this reading was given as a sort of declaration of policy by a teacher who happens to be of the fourth generation of teachers, who is certainly not going to surrender the perennial aim of education through the centuries in order to show his eager pliability in fitting in with the new screening and grading system for the upper income brackets in the managerial state, which seems to be the necessary objective for anyone who wants to make a career in higher education in the latter part of the 20th century. I happen to be the sort of scientist called a botanist, a student of an aspect of reality which is not only harmless in a pretty harmful world, it is outstandingly beneficial. Indeed, it is the very basis of life on this planet. I can assure you, I'm not in the least ashamed of being a botanist, of being in a tradition that goes back at least to Theophrastus in 300 BC or so. If the image of botany, to use the current jargon, has been made somewhat sneer-worthy in money-making circles, so much the worse for money-making circles. It is rather characteristic of the times that botanists should now be expected to call themselves plant biologists in order to register their obedience to the current trend in prescribed thought on the subject. But besides being a botanist, I also happen to be a poet. Probably a bad poet in the literary sense, but not a negligible one as regards social impact. And in order to overcome what is nowadays called the generation gap, I am going to use some of the voices of my youth. This thing now called the generation gap, of course, has always existed. It is part of the nature of things, but it has been exaggerated in this generation by those who are trying to cut off the young from their cultural inheritance so that they can make political use of them. Also, I want to introduce some feeling of time into our thoughts, which tend to be excessively short-term and ephemeral. So I'm going to ask you to listen to some of the poems of a schoolboy and an undergraduate and a young graduate in the 1920s and 1930s, which are by no means irrelevant to the present day, in that our situation at the present time is based upon what went before it. For this shorter tape, I've tried to select some of those which seem to have some current or topical interest. Let us start with a schoolboy poem, which indeed marks the summit of my literary career, with the Milton Prize at Milton's School, where I was one of the 153 poor scholars provided for by the beneficence of Dean Collett. The subject is so traditional for the poet that it is remarkable that it should also be highly contemporary. The Milton Prize was so invariably won by members of the top classical form that the envelopes bearing the author's names were always opened by their form master in front of the class to see which of them had won the prize. On this occasion, the celebrated Leslie Matthews is actually reported to have sworn in public, "My God, well, I'm damned," on opening an envelope and finding that the prize-winning poem had actually been written by a member of the grubby and uncivilized science side. An unprecedented event. Ah, well, here it is. The Moon.
Behold a planet, barren, gaunt, and cold, a mighty cinder hurled through empty space and doomed to swing its dead and changeless face around the earth for centuries untold. Upon its rugged surface is no trace of life or air or moisture or of light, save that pale borrowed radiance which at night limns it in ivory, its only grace. Yet once perhaps those vast and arid plains were swept by winds and washed by hissing rains, and life sprang up in ages long passed by, flourished a while and died. Naught now remains but huge ringed mountain ranges rearing high their summits to a black and starry sky.
Well, commonplace enough now, but not then. Possibly one of the first sonnets ever written to the actual moon, and behind it was months of work in making a 6.5-inch Newtonian reflecting telescope. Of course, the idea of life on the moon is now out of date. It's been transferred to Mars. But I can't help putting in here another poem about the moon, written several years later, which also seems a bit prophetic. All the worlds are waiting, waiting for the moon. Please will someone get it, bring it in a spoon? All the worlds are starving, all the worlds are moan. All the things they're wanting, they already own. Peace and power and plenty lie beside their hand, only for the taking. Can't they understand? All the worlds are yearning, staring in a swoon, gawping on the rich earth for a barren moon. Just a lump of cinder rolling round the sky. Men must go and grab it. Lord alone knows why. Well, they've gone and they've grabbed it, or at least bits of it, and I gawped with the rest. And now here's another one, which was a bit before its time. It's called Civilization. When Herod slew innocent babies, he put them to death with the sword. It was shame, shame, hell, 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 and the wrath of the Lord. But now we are quite as efficient in helping our children to die. And it's hoot, hoot, honk, honk, run off the pavement and dry. Let quiet and greenery perish. These things are of very small worth when there's dirt, din, fog, fumes to spread and replenish the earth. For progress must always continue, though sweetness and safety be lost. And it's push, shove, on, and no matter the cost. While science pours good things in one end, they fall from the other in showers through this civilization of ours. Sounds a bit like the irascible product of some elderly anti-pollutionist in the 1970s, doesn't it? Actually, I think I was about 16 at the time.
Now, here's something a little different. It's called In Petunia Bay. Petunia Bay's in Spitsbergen, where I went on my one and only Arctic expedition. I've never forgotten it all these years. There is no night, only a shadow cast by the dense spinning earth as she swims past. There is no day, only an endless light which neither breaks nor sets, waxes nor wanes. Here where the day dies not, these things are plain. Here every crumbling crag throws a small evening in its wake, where the mist ribbons grow, the sea takes on a pearly gloom, and the green castles of the floating ice whiten and lose their glow. Soon the returning sun chases the fleeing shade from crag to crag, from stone to willow tussock, swallows the drifting flags of mist, resets the floating ice like precious jewels, and warms once more the brown crags, the prone and stunted plants, the white glacier, the still fjord, circling lower and lower in the sky towards its long eclipse. The tinkle of reviving glacier streams scarce breaks the established silence of the rocks. The sharp edge of the evening moves swiftly across the bay. The world is but a ball, and here I sit high on the end and see it spinning round, heaving over and over in the sunlight. Down there, in that incredible region whence I came, over the opal edge of the horizon, day succeeds night, day, night, day, night, in regular succession, and multitudinous machine-like men scuttling to and fro like clockwork toys observe this sequence there, in thought and action, bound and circumscribed, minute by minute, while the breath of life blows through them by the rule of ticking time machines. The shadow moves, the world is but a ball, the world is but a ball, and what am I? I see my destiny in the sinking sun, my desolation in the bare brown hills. Alas, I am a stranger here. I must return, alas, for I am one of them. Well, that was the effect of the Arctic. It's pretty high up in the Arctic too, Petunia Bay, about 79.5 degrees north. The sun just going round in the sky. I've never forgotten it for a moment.
If this was not a glimpse of eternity, it was at least a glimpse of timelessness. People sometimes wonder why my day sometimes slips round, and I find myself going to bed when other people are getting up. Well, perhaps this is the explanation.
While we're about it, I may as well give you the other one about that trip, which is about Bear Island. It's about halfway between the North Cape and Spitsbergen. Its highest mountain or hill is called Misery Fjell. But no one cares for the Isle of Bears. I see no need to doubt it. It's a frozen bog in a bank of fog, and the ships steer round about it. Its highest fell is Misery Fell, the mist lies always on it. But no men dwell on Misery Fell, for who could dwell upon it? It's cold as hell on Misery Fell, it's dark as well all winter, so Some lichens grow and a moss or so, and the rocks there slowly splinter. The seagulls yell on Misery Fell, the fulmars wheel around it. I cannot tell why Misery Fell was found, whoever found it. There sounds no bell on Misery Fell, no voice, no cheer, no chatter. There's only gloom and plenty of room for things that do not matter. That isle I've seen, but have not been upon it. Who would do so? Yet now I dwell on Misery Fell, alone as Robinson Crusoe. Oh dear. Now here's one for the foresters to jeer at. It's called Fallen. Tall, tall, swaying throughout thy length, O feathery-fingered one, how art thou fallen low, how art thou fallen? In vain the thousands chance that saw thy birth, in vain the rising sap of 40 springs, O winter-garmented, shaking the crystal powder from thy boughs, how art thou fallen low, how art thou fallen? The wind played music, and the birds sang among thy scented branches. Thy winged pollen floating on the air swelled the green cones to brown fertility, and yellowing needles, when their time had come, renewed the sun-flecked carpet in thy shade. O slender pyramid, tracing thy penciled path among the stars, how art thou fallen low, how art thou fallen? The top shudders, the tall trunk sways and groans. Slowly against the background of the sky, thy stately spire heels over like a ship and plunges down, down on the quaking earth. How art thou fallen? The iron machines dismember, pump, and press. Women mob film star, women mob film star, women mob film star, women mob film star. Oh, feathery fingered one, how art thou fallen? Not with it, eh? Sentimental. Well, I've got another one here for the foresters, especially. It's called Downsworth, or the Hard-Headed Businessman. I am the hard-headed businessman. I understand hard, practical things. None of this impractical nonsense about the soil and the trees and the flowers. None of this soft, idealistic rubbish for me. I'm a hard-headed, solid, practical chap. Down to earth, that's my motto. Bricks and mortar, timber, iron, copper, manganese, rubber, gold, uranium, engineering, electronics, and so on. That's what I believe in. But even more, that hardiest of all hard facts. Hard cash. The ultimate material entity. What is a pound? Why, it's a note promising to pay, of course. Signed by the chief cashier of the Bank of England, no less. What could be more solid than that? And what is this pound that is promised? I've just told you. It's a promise to pay the bearer £1, soundly based on the very best authority. Yes, and this further pound that is promised? Is this also a promise? To pay a promise? To pay a promise? To pay a promise? To pay a promise, 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 to pay a promise. Stop it, sir, damn you, sir. You're undermining confidence. Go on like that and you'll bring the whole civilization crashing about our ears. For this I believe in. This is what I mean by hard-headed practical common sense. This is not to be questioned, for this is the ultimate reality. Now, who are the realists? The forest botanist who for the last 20 years has been saying, study your trees, associated fungi, and vegetation, soil, aspect, climate, get the right trees in the right place and you can leave the
price to look after itself. Or the people who say, this is idealistic nonsense. What you want is the price of Sitka spruce in 2020 as calculated by the computer after you put in a couple of dozen assumptions as to what is going to happen. There's something hard to work on. Or is it?
This brings us to the great crisis of the youth of my generation. The great depression or slump of the 1920s and 30s, which indeed resembles our present time in this, that it was the last time before this when the whole world and everybody's life was dominated and tortured by money, by the manipulation of finance and credit. Then it was deflation. Then we either had a slump with deflation or a boom with inflation. Now they've managed to have both at once, but that's by the way. Well, here's one of the first poems I wrote about that. It's called To a Wheat Farmer.
Grey autumn clouds to the westward, far woods yellow in the sun, brown earth turning to the tractor plough, the task begun. Black frost gripping the ploughlands under a vault of grey, stealthily working for men and silently crumbling the clay. Pale gold sunshine reflected from acres of quivering green, cloud shadows swiftly approaching and passing, dulling the sheen. Steady whir of the reaper, cutting till set of sun, harvest work and harvest wages for everyone. Stooking and carting and stacking, thatching it well from the rain, thrashing and dressing and carefully storing the well-earned grain. Plump grain, the colour of sunshine, the best of the good earth's giving. Poor fool. Growing it was wasted time. You lose your living. That, of course, was the situation in the 1930s. If a farm, which is a perfectly economic unit, all of a sudden becomes an uneconomic unit, what has changed? The real things? The men, the soil, the wheat? Or is it the money? Certainly was the money then. Incidentally, this poem had an aftermath which pleased me a lot more than any literary prize. When I went to Australia in 1969, an Australian came up to me and he started quoting a bit of this poem. He'd remembered for about 30 years. And he told me that he called his little daughter, who was born about that time, with the unusual girl's name of Grain, and that she'd now got a daughter, his granddaughter, who was also called Grain. So it seems that this little poem has started a girl's name in Australia.
Oh dear, do I hear you yawning and saying, oh. Now we're going to have this elderly man's reminiscences. This ghastly old slump that happened before we were born. What a bore.
But these aren't reminiscences. These are the impact of this ghastly event on a young man, your contemporary. And this is an event that affects all our lives now. This is what it felt like to be living in the 1930s. The fields are ripe to harvest. The fields are ripe with grain. Oh poverty, oh misery, we have too much again. The silver surplus fishes are rotting in a heap. The fruit is dropping from the trees. There are too many sheep and far too many cattle. There is a glut of meat. Oh, poverty, oh, misery, we have too much to eat. They've ploughed the cotton under, the wool they leave in stacks. The threadbare clothes of penury still do for people's backs. The great machines are idle, the men are idle too. They have been taught that work is life, they have no work to do. With milk and honey flowing, the promised land has come. The milk is flowing down the drain, but not into the slum. The world of power and plenty envelops us unseen. The plenty of the fruitful earth, the power of the machine. Oh, cruel, bitter mockery! The more that we are blessed with our abundant heritage, the more we're dispossessed. Oh, mean and futile robbery that drives us to despair, that fights against prosperity lest we should have our share. Oh, needless mad frustration, oh, hell and foul damnation. Oh, staring ribs of poverty. The world, I say, the world is well. The shops are full, they live to sell. We cannot live unless we buy with paper tokens. Why, oh, why must we be starved? The things are there, the power is there, the skill is there, the need, my God, the need is there. Oh, ledger-bound futility, oh, screaming imbecility, the money is not there. Well, that poem went round the world and had quite an impact. Here's perhaps a less bitter expression of the same feeling. It's called The Joke. There was a ball went round and round with clouds and mist and dew on it. The yellow sunlight warmed the ground and plants and people grew on it. The plants grew up, the fruit fell down. There was no other way for it. And people starved in every town because they could not pay for it. The common people could not pay. It makes me laugh to think on it. Unless they labored every day for paper with some ink on it. The sun's bright power which set them free, the more they did employ of it, the less employment there could be, the less they could enjoy of it. That ball still rolls upon its way. They don't know what to do with it. It will get richer every day. The joke gets richer too with it. Well, the joke's still here, you know. For all their talk about population explosion and so on, our powers of production have increased enormously since then. The world is an incredibly rich place. It's only we that make it poor. Here's another version of it, called Biography of an Englishman. John Montgomery Ronald Gray worked on the ledger all the day, entering figures with his pen, and his weekly value was £2.10. John Montgomery couldn't afford anything much but his bed and board, a weekly flick, an occasional show, a pint or two, and a kiss or so. But he showed no signs of discontent as the years went by and his youth was spent, with never a chance of child or wife, for earning his living was his life. Alas, the upstart firm next door ruined the game forevermore by investing in one of those machines which enable a typist in her teens to make more entries in a day than 40 clerks, the good old way. Then up spake Ronald's honest boss. Although we're running at a loss and we can't compete with these low-down cads, I'll play the game by you, my lads. I'll do my duty as I must and keep you in work until we bust. And so, according to expectation, the firm went into liquidation. And Ronald found such small enjoyment in the state of life called unemployment that seeing he couldn't be a worker and wouldn't live as an idle shirker, he turned on gas and duly died. And of course the verdict was suicide.
The parson talked as parsons must, of ashes to ashes and dust to dust. But what they buried beneath the clay, under a stone marked Ronald Gray, was really, could they but have seen, 1/40th of a ledger machine. Where we were heading, here's one called Very Sound Song. Man was made for labor. Man was made for work. You must keep him at it, or he's sure to shirk. He yells for bread and butter. He bawls for house and clothes. But what he's really wanting is a grindstone for his nose. No cash to squander, and no time for sin. That's the way to keep him straight and do the devil in. The devil, he's a sly bird. He sends the rain and sun to make the crops grow thick and fast and stop work being done. The devil made the coal and the devil made the oil and all that damn machinery to rob us of our toil. The devil made those scientists to give us plenty, but God made the government to fight against the glut. God sends the hailstorms and God sends the drought to make us all work harder and keep the devil out. God sends the pestilence and God sends the blight, and God sends the bankers to keep our money tight. We're nearly round the corner, prosperity's in sight, so do your bit to help us win the economic fight. And if we do our duty and answer to the call, perhaps God'll send another war, and there'll be work for all. That's still the attitude, you know. And here's one called Prosperity Christmas. Here are some newspaper cuttings which stimulated this. You are more prosperous than you have been for a long time, and you have every right to feel pleased with the figures issued by the Board of Trade. I am aware that the rise in food prices is causing concern. In general, I would remind him that the rise in food prices reflects the recovery from the conditions of the period of depression. President of the Board of Trade replying to an MP in Parliament. With the stimulus of the rearmament programme still strongly at work, Britain can face the economic future with confidence. The great crowds buying Christmas presents this week are an earnest of our well-distributed prosperity. Evening Standard leading article. December 9th, 1937. Christmas Day is here again. There's need for some good cheer again. So fill your glass with beer again and shout hooray, hooray. They said a year or two ago the prices all are much too low. That's why you have to suffer so. But now they say hooray. Prosperity is here again, the cost of living's dear again, so let us cheer and cheer again, hooray, hooray, hooray. And even though you can't afford to keep the birth feast of the Lord, you still can shout with one accord, hooray, hooray, hooray. For some of us shall dine right well, because we've made a bomb or shell to feed the fires of our next hell, hooray, hooray, hooray. Praise banks from whom all credits flow to us poor creatures here below, provided that to war we go. Hooray, hooray, hooray.
Oh yes, we knew where we were going, which is more than this generation does.
Here's another on the same theme, called The Unknown Warriors, 1936 again. Blood that was shed and bones that rot. Remember these, but remember not blood that is thinning and bones that stare from the skins of the living everywhere. Press and pulpit, blubber and rave of an unknown man in a well-known grave. The unknown warrior, unknown sheep whom they drove to the slaughter, and now they weep while his corpse they garnish and use as bait to lure the living to meet his fate. Is one more war the sole release from this they call by the name of peace?
this strangling horror which keeps from birth the life and abundance of the earth. There's no parade, no pomp and pride for an unknown debtor and suicide. No abbey tomb for the unknown dead who died because they were underfed. No beat of the drum nor sound of horn for the unknown ones who were never born. It was about then that Mussolini started his war in Abyssinia. Here's a press cutting. The task of colonizing and civilizing Ethiopia will provide the Italian people with work for 50 years to come. Mussolini. Bang, bang, the bodies fall. What a pity. Not at all. It's necessary, I'm afraid, because it is so good for trade. Sob, sob, the women weep because their men are put to sleep. Come now, come, don't make a fuss. In peace they wear superfluous. Clank, clank, the wheels revolve. There's nothing like a war to solve the unemployment problem. So, bravo, bravissimo. And then, of course, the war actually came. August 1939. There's a dull throb in the earth's sod, a wild light in the sky, and a mutter of men complaining that they do not want to die. The fools and the clouds gather. The raindrops begin to fall. There's the sound of the fools praying, heaven forgive us all. The stir of the wills shifting like pawns in a ghastly chess, the tramp of the mines marching to the kettle drums of the press, the thunder of herds bolting the way that they ran before. As cattle go to the slaughter, so we are driven to war. Oh, and here's perhaps my best-known war poem, which was quoted in Parliament. It's called Against the New Order. It was the name Hitler gave for his empire in Europe, the New Order. London's burning, London's burning, no reviving, no returning. There it goes in smoke and flame, it will never be the same, it will never be the same. London town where I was born is a picture charred and torn, rich and splendid, dark and mean, it will never more be seen, it will never more be seen. Roaring off to kingdom come, home and office, church and slum, wrapped up in their smoky shroud, blazing on the bronzed clouds, good and evil, foul and fair, burn to rubble, ash and air. Desolation is such fun, say the leveller and the Hun. Good we build on ill foundations, peace on earth from blasted nations, fire and ruin are well done, say the leveller and the Hun. Level, level, saith the devil, good and evil shall be one. Brave new worlds are built on rubble, fire burn and cauldron bubble. Soon we shall produce our plan for the betterment of man. Level, level, saith the devil, good and evil shall be one. Union of all mankind, dominated by our mind, world policeman, judge and warder, to enforce world law, world order. Level, level, saith the devil, good and evil shall be one. Soon our flag shall be unfurled,
Soon shall dawn our brave new world, inequalities smoothed away, neither white nor black but grey, tepid neither hot nor cold, middle-aged not young nor old, level, level, says the devil, glory, glory, gloats the Hun, and Hosanna, shouts the planner, good and evil shall be one. We who in the ashes dwell want no planned and ordered hell, fight no wars to be policed when the bombs and fires have ceased. Life's too precious far to give for any freedom but to live. 'Twixt the leveller and the Hun we are like to be undone. Shackles of their monstrous plan grip the living mind of man. Level, level, said the devil, struggle with me if you can. We who used to lift our eyes for our succour to the skies find destruction and despair, howling desolation, where Hun and devil now hold revel and defile our English air. Lifeless monsters on us fall, shrieking with gigantic sound. We would turn to something small, firmly rooted in the ground. Though all hell the heavens rend, hope shall rise and not descend from the ruin round our feet, gay, invincible, and sweet. Scarcely are the ashes cold, dormant seeds we beneath unfold, twining shoots and leaves are thrust through the rubble and the dust, green and shouting in the sun, good and evil are not one. Lift your heart up and your head. Living things can cope with dead.
While I am on war poems, I may as well put in this one, which seems to be singularly appropriate again in 1971. Now here is a poem called Union is Death, which was published in the Poetry Review of November-December 1942, when the threat of union was Hitler's threat. Now, in 1971, it seems equally appropriate. Union is death. Out of the universal, out of the infinite same, out of the homogeneous whole, struggling and crying we came, small and naked and different, bearing the seeds of strife, many from one, as planets from sun. That is the way of life. Back to the same, the different, small shall be merged in great, that which is high shall be levelled low, the crooked shall be made straight. Back to the earth, the body, back to the air, the breath, back to the whole, the living soul, that is the law of death. Life is the love of true men, but some incline to die. For death the leveller is their god, equality is their cry. To unify is their desire, the world in one control. This is their aim, who love the same and worship the deathly whole. But we are a living people who live in a separate isle. They shall not unify us by war, nor yet by talk and guile. The living nations we have bred, by love, not law, unite. Though devils urge, we will not merge, while we have strength to fight. To add a current comment, we paid the price in blood and sweat and tears for a free Britain for 1,000 years. These party hucksters now, to their disgrace, would sell us in the common marketplace. Let me give you a sample of what I call conservation verse.
So here we are, to the hydroelectric planners, with the compliments of the author. Here the loud chanting western gales on Snowdon's sides are lifted high, and fleets of vapour spread their sails and crowd across and fill the sky, and wrap the old lady in her veils, her mystic shawls of white and grey, whence fall her teeming tears on Wales, for the rain it raineth every day. And every day, and as it must, it falls on everything below, upon the unjust and the just. And where it falls, there must it flow, and where it flows, the earth is green, and green grow the grasses, green grow the grasses whereon the sheep graze, and green grow the mosses, and green grow the trees. For the rain it takes innumerable ways, and life runs with it in all of these. But you, can you not understand? It is the lifeblood of the land. You have the huge air's singing energy. On all our coasts the tides toil endlessly. Above, the sun pours down continually his vast, unthinkable, unending shower of heat and light. Yet you must take your power by pilfering the gentle rain from heaven. Tunnel and channel and force the water from its course. Here dry, there drown the soil. Here tip your heaps of spoil, damming and blasting the earth that gave you birth, mauling her mighty shapes like poor demented apes, ridiculous subhuman fools unfit to handle human tools, playing in their disastrous vanity with forces which need sense and sanity. Now here's a ballad of bloody bureaucracy, which, appropriately enough, but I think I should apologise, has a four-letter word in it. It seemed quite in place. It's based, again, on a perfectly genuine news item. Hear the song of Mr. Baker, who was a car maker. But cars got so abundant that he became redundant. So just like the government said, he trained to be a welder instead. And he passed his tests and all okay, till he tried to get a job one day. But they couldn't give him a welder's job till he had his union card. And the union couldn't give him a card till he had a welder's job. But they couldn't give him a welder's job till he had his union card. And the union couldn't give him a card till he had a welder's job. But they couldn't give him a welder's job till he had his union card. And the union couldn't give him a card till he had a welder's job. But they couldn't give him a welder's job till he had the union card. And the union couldn't give him a card till he had a welder's job. But they couldn't give him a welder's... Well, if you want me to go on singing this bloody silly song, it can go on round and round and on the whole day long. They couldn't give him his bloody job till he had his union card, and they wouldn't give him his bloody card till he had his welder's job. Now don't you think it's balmy, and don't you think it's hard, that a chap can't have a bloody job till he's got his bloody card? I tell you, it's plain half-witted. It's a fucking shame and farce. There's only just one thing to do with a bureaucratic class, and that's take its cars and its forms and all and shove 'em up its arse.
Here's one called Mushroom, which seems an appropriate comment from a mycologist.
How merrily the mushroom stands inheriting the earth, each meekly, firmly making its assertion. This is all I am, this is all I know. This is how I grow, just so, no other way, just so. Here I arise, I swell. Here is my cap, my bell, prevailing against death and nothingness, against the gates of hell. No whimsy-whamsy stool for toad or elf, you fool. My buckler raised against the sky to shield, protect my life, posterity, my invisible rain of spores which, drifting in the wind, renew my kind again. Just so I grow in a day. I live, I die, I live. I am I, this is my way. I am 3 inches high. You cannot make me however you try. I am beyond you. Though you can make a mushroom 5 miles high, burst flaming from the mouth of hell, and spread its megalomaniac devil stool, and hang its murderous bell across the sky, polluting with an invisible poisonous rain the entire rolling ball of earth. Mushroom of power and pride and disinheritance, mushroom of fear and pain, to make men cower and women cry, and make of children not yet come to birth, not yet conceived, not thought of, monsters. There is your mushroom. Here am I. There is your way. It is not my way.
Mass production man.
Are there no barbed words, acid-tipped, spat out with dynamite to penetrate where the mind lurks within the work machine? Is there no rhythm that will catch the cogs of his predictable rotating will and force it into living revolution? Behold this monster, mass production man, stamped, standardized, meshed 50 weeks in the year upon the wheels of industry, the rest still keeping time with unreduced inertia. See, when the clock hands show the given angle, he half awakes, pulls on work uniform, gulps food, sucks press, is borne on rattling wheels, performs the motions paid for, and returns, vacant of energy, to be kept from life by some mechanical time occupier, a radio noise or shadows on a screen, or else to joggle rhythmically in time with mechanized sex-stimulating sounds, and so to bed and standard love procedure with mass-produced conception hindrances, lest life should disobey the limits set by figures in the bank, and should explode into a new man, heir to all the ages. He, too, soon to be seized before he lives too much, schooled, passed through all the standards, graded, stamped with his work class, the corners rounded off, the nicely finished hole well regulated, put up for sale upon the labour market, and reckoned lucky if it's bought and set, revolving in the old and vicious circle. To go to work, to earn the cash, to buy the food, to get the strength, to go to work, to earn the cash, to buy the food, to get the strength, to go to work, to earn the cash, to buy the food, to get the strength, to go to work, to earn the cash, to buy the food, to get the strength. To go to work, to earn cash, to buy food, to get strength, to go to work, earn cash, buy food, get strength. It is not glory. To go to work, to earn the cash, to buy the food, to get strength, to go to work. It is not honor. Work, to earn the cash, to buy food, to get strength, to go to work. Neither is it riches, work, work, cash, 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 food, strength, strength, that we fight and contend for, work, work, cash, cash, food, food, strength, strength, work, cash, food, strength, but liberty alone, cash, food, strength, work, cash, food, strength, which no honest man, cash, food, strength, cash, 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 will lose but with his life, cash, food, strength, work, cash, food, strength, work, 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 cash, 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 stop, 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 stop. Is there no sanity? Is there no plenty on the earth? No power from the sun? No understanding what they mean? Is there no man's work to be done, that men should mimic the machine? Is there no purpose then in birth, but to cheat death until we can no longer? Have then our fathers toiled in vain, left us no freer and no stronger for all the labours of the human brain? When I was faint for lack of food to eat, they boasted they had halved the stock of wheat. When I was clothed in rags and blue with cold, they planned to scrap more spindles, I am told. When I was homeless, wandering in the wet, they wrote that the demand for homes was met. When I and my beloved would be wed, then she must lose her living too, they said. Oh, who are these that take such care to feed always the markets, not the people's need, who show concern for industry and trade, and that an export surplus should be made and budgets duly balanced at the price of customary's human sacrifice? They have no part with us. They do not think with common men who want to eat and drink, to clothe themselves and shelter from the weather, to love, to mate, and to be warm together, to bring their children forth with joy and pride, and live contented by their own fireside. They have no soul, no sense, no sanity. They have forgotten their humanity. Mindless machines they are, that never weary of echoing the perpetual parrot query, where's the money to come from? Where's the money to come from? Where's the money to come from? Money, money up, money down, money, 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 money all round the town, money, 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 hey, money, ho, money, high, money, low, money, stay, money, go, money, quick, money, slow, money, 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 in, money, out, money, 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 all round about, money, money, money. You must have money, you must have money, you must have money, 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 warm, money, cold, money, 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 young, money, old, money, 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 money for your children, money for your wife, money for your death, and money for your life. You must have money. Must have money, 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 eat, money, drink, money, 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 breathe, money, stink, money, 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 take, money, give, money, money, give. You must have money, you must have money, you must have money, money to live. Money's made of paper, money's made of ink, money rules all us fools because we can't think. Hey, money, ho, money, high, money, low, money, stay, money, go, money, quick, money, slow, money, 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 in, money, out, money, 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 all round about, money, 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 you must have money, you must have money, you must have money, you must have money, 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 must have money, money, must have money, you must have money, 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 money. Oh, fools, you have forgotten whence ye live. The brown earth and the seed hidden within it, the green shoots and the cattle grazing them, and the tall trees, the climax of the living world, clothed in such dignity as men shall hardly attain to. Fierce sunlight pouring from above, warm earth enriching from below, leaf greenness everywhere, everywhere underneath the sun. The moss and willow tussocks of the frozen north, the wide curved grasslands where the cattle browse, the green dark avenues of tropic lands, all these are your heritage. Hark, soft descending of the rain, slow, slow unfolding of the buds, leaf greenness everywhere, everywhere underneath the sun. The whisper of a million million needles among the pines, the rustling of the broad green leaves in the forest, the faint hiss of the young grasses in the wind. Everywhere the same magic, everywhere the same greenness, everywhere underneath the sun. Turn again to the real things whence you have your being, the bright sun which has set wide the door of freedom, the winds and the waterfalls, your strong servants, the green plants which feed you and teach you beauty and skill and understanding. Hark, soft descending of the rain, slow, slow unfolding of the buds, leaf greenness everywhere, everywhere underneath the sun.